Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Reality TV Rehap-Ups, the Rob Has a Podcast podcasts minus Rob. My name is Jessica Leese, and we are here today to shine our light on the awesome episode that was Amazing Race Canada Season 4, Episode 4. Dan Heaton, how you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling good, and, you know, it's crazy that we can have an episode where really, right up front, I mean, pretty quickly I figured out who was going to get eliminated. You just kind of feel it. And they did tasks that pretty much are pretty standard for the Amazing Race, the types of tasks. I mean, just the basic types. Yet, somehow this episode was so good. It was so much fun. I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm 100% in agreement with you. And, you know, in the first 5 minutes of the episode, I was already thinking, oh, is this going to be one of those boring ones where one team is hours and hours behind? And we know it the whole time, and it's not fun or interesting. And not only was it both fun and interesting, but they actually almost ended up saving the team that was hours and hours behind.
Yeah, that was interesting, because I agree. The stuff they were saying, like you had Anatanya saying, we can still do it. We got to still try. And I was like, oh, goodness gracious. You know, here we go. And the thing is, they didn't start that far behind. It was weird. They started like 30 minutes behind, you know, but a few hours behind the leaders. And yes, I did write them down again, but I was ready this time. But, you know, the thing about it was, you're right. They came back. They were with other teams on the screen. That is a great achievement. And to me, that was like almost secondary. That was like a bonus. Like the fact that there was some tension at the end, because it was, I found myself just smiling and enjoying this group so much during this leg. And just everyone had such a good attitude about it that it just made, even when they tried the same thing 50 times, people didn't freak out. It was cool.
I felt so much affection for so many of these people, and it's becoming another one of these things. I felt the same way during season one, particularly. I like all these teams so much. Can't we just have them all race all the way to the finals so we don't have to lose anybody from this point forward?
Right. It's weird because, you know, you look at a group and you figure there's going to be two or three I'm really rooting for, and two or three that I'm like, they're good. And then a few that I'm like, and the ones that I think that way often go a long time. But really, it's like, I just found myself writing lots of exclamation points and notes I wrote down, and they killed it, and just fun stuff. Like, I don't know, especially the fact that they went overseas. You can often see teams even this early get like killer fatigue and start freaking out and, you know, and everything. And there were tasks that could make people freak out, particularly one. And yeah, people had their moments, but people really just bore down and killed the tasks and kept a smile on their face, and we're just kind of goofballs. I like goofiness in my Amazing Race teams.
Yeah, I think nobody quit. Nobody took any penalties. Imagine that. See, Amazing Race Canada, you can churn out, like, you can have the most pedestrian episode ever, and nobody takes a penalty. Everybody has a good attitude, and you're still, like, miles ahead of the U.S. version.
I know. It's crazy.
It is super crazy. But on that note, why don't we just dive right in? We can start out with our staggered start times. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm looking at these start times here. Ann and Tanya were almost exactly 2 hours behind Joel and Ashley, who left in first place. That seems like not a lot of time to make up, especially when you consider looking at the start times from the previous legs. We had as much as like 3 or 4 hours separating the teams in earlier episodes.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, they did another thing where they, you know, this was not as organized, like there are so many buses with so many teams. This was really just kind of constant buses going. But it must be, I think it's one of those situations too. We saw them in traffic. It may be one of those situations for them where they, even though they were only 30 minutes behind Julian Lowell and, you know, another 20 or so behind Rivette and Rita, they must have timed it bad. Like basically they just missed a bus, and then the bus they were on like hit the equivalent of rush hour or something, and it knocked them back further, because it didn't look like, I feel like they did pretty well. I mean, yes, it took them a while, but they actually took less time on the detour than most of the other teams, if, you know, if we can believe what we saw with the number of attempts. So I think they just had some bad luck right up front, and Tanya did, which is too bad, because I felt like they were pretty good this leg.
Yeah, it seemed like they didn't make a whole lot of mistakes. And you know, at this point, I think we're going to get into those episodes where you can still not make any mistakes and wind up getting eliminated anyway.
Right. And it kind of fits with what we've talked about in the last few episodes where someone asks, you know, is this, how does this cast compare or whatnot? And I would say that consistency wise, this cast is very solid across the board. You don't, because like really, and no one took a penalty, so they didn't benefit there. Nobody, you know, like last episode where, you know, they were nearly passing out and teams struggled, but they struggled at really hard things. So that's tough because you can't just blow. No one was going to finish tasks later in like 5 minutes. So they didn't have a lot of room for error. But right up front, the way teams got split up, it was interesting. But because things took a while, a little bit with the roadblock and especially with the detour, you did see some movement around.
Yeah, I'm so amazed at how much shuffling happened to this leg. It really felt like it was anybody's game. And we've seen a lot of seasons of this show from several different corners of the Amazing Race world where it was a foregone conclusion from the second everybody took off in the morning who was going to finish first. And this was not that. I really feel like any of these teams could end up pulling out a win. And especially like this is a season where Kelly and Kate can take first place. And I think it's got to be official now. I take back everything I said about Kelly and Kate.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you could kind of feel it too. Like they didn't struggle, but they, you know, she didn't do amazing. Kelly didn't do amazing on the roadblock, but she did pretty good considering what I would have expected if when this season started, if someone had said, Kelly and Kate, one of them's going to have to put together a scooter, I would have been like, oh my gosh, this is not going to go well. But to finish first and to have two good legs in a row to show that last leg, you know, was not a fluke. And yes, they did finish last in leg two, but they just seem to have, and also we can add to the list, you know, they've mentioned shopping. We mentioned, you know, the last week with the food. We can add karaoke, especially karaoke that relates to their native language as a task that they destroyed. And I don't mean to jump too far ahead, but overall, to see a team do that and then to look at the top four, and I know we're jumping way ahead, but just quickly while we're on it, to have female teams go 1, 2, 3, 4 and last, but still is cool. And it didn't feel like a fluke. It felt like these four teams deserved to be the top four of the week.
Yeah, I'm really loving it. And yeah, any team in this race, no matter how like well or ill-equipped they are, can go into this race and one of the tasks can come right down the plate for them and they'll knock it out of the park. But to have two great legs in a row, that says to me, you're figuring it out. That says to me that there's a lot of things you can do that you can apply to many different aspects of this race. And so I think we're going to keep seeing great things from Kelly and Kate. I hope we are.
Yeah. And I'm liking them more each time. I do enjoy the through line of them being afraid of every animal, though. Like we had the birds, which nobody seemed to bother by the birds. And I wasn't sure if it was Kelly or Kate, but I apologize for that. But was very scared of birds. And after the toads last week and everything, I'm just like, well, hopefully they don't have to dive into a giant pit fear factor style of things. But on the flip side, I thought they would be more, because of that fact, they would struggle more with the food, and they did not. So that's a good team.
Yeah, it's alive things that bother them, Dad, not dead things. Like, it's already dead. What can it do to you?
Even that really freaky bat. But yeah, it's cool to see them just kill it. I mean, and to have it shows, though, how much, you know, skills are very important, but attitude also very important, and teamwork. And those two work together. Kelly and Kate work together very well.
They definitely do. So let's back up to the roadblock. And let's talk about this a little bit, because I got to dig deep into the annals of Amazing Race U.S. history here, because when I saw that roadblock, I thought immediately of a detour from, I think it was season 9, where it was literally the most impossible detour I've ever seen on the show. And I was thinking this is going to be one of those things, but it turned out to be like kind of on the level of IKEA furniture, I think. But do you remember this? Do you remember this roadblock in season 9 or this detour in season 9 where they had to, like, they're just given a pile of motorcycle parts and they're like, here, make a motorcycle?
I vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was pretty much, I think maybe one team did it and everybody else looked at it and noped on out of there.
I don't remember it clearly. I vaguely remember it. I do feel like sometimes the put together the motorcycle or put together the task kind of all meld together in my brain, because it does come up periodically. But usually they're they're on the hard side, but not like that. And I do, knowing the Amazing Race Canada, I would have suspected too. Like, you saw that later, you know, we had the thing where the instructions were actually provided, which, wow, I think they probably tested it and realized without the instructions, it was going to be like that case from season 9.
Yeah, I think that must have been it. But, you know, they didn't make it too hard. They didn't make it too easy because they just said, here you go, do the task. And it was up to the racers to figure out that the instructions were right there in front of them.
Yeah, which didn't totally happen. I mean, we did have a case where you had, you know, Emmett, this was his jam. I mean, come on, you know, and Joel, you know, who Joel's dry sense of humor really makes me laugh, too, with his, you know, but I love how he's putting together this thing. I mean, actually, the whole leg, and he looks like he's basically asleep. He's got this look like, basically, I mean, he is a mechanic, so this is easy, but this, we'll carry on to this later. But those two basically looked at this task like me. I would look at this task and be like, oh, why did I pick this? Why would I ever pick this? You know, I do feel like a tool sometimes, but you know, I should never pick this. These guys are like, this may be the greatest task I've ever had. So that's one thing where you have two of the people, but I was really impressed by how well, you know, you have Frankie walk up and just look like she's like how I would look, but yet she powered through it. So I think it was easier. It was the right level of difficulty for me.
Yeah, I think it was not ridiculously easy, but it wasn't like, we didn't spend so much time on it, we were getting bored with it. And honestly, we could have spent a lot of time on some of these tasks. And I'm, you know, another general thought about the episode is we do have the kinds of tasks where people are there for hours and hours, and we don't get bored with it because there's so much packed into this episode. In addition to the roadblock and detour, we had two other extra tasks. I got to think, like, Amazing Race US, why are you spending so much time on the roadblock and detour? You could pack another task in there 90% of the time and give us something else to look at, you know, help our attention spans. And Canada does this right. They give you so much action. So you move straight from this roadblock into eating the giant pile of dead things, and it's fantastic. Like, it's such a nice segue.
Yeah, I have a thought quickly that I think the U.S. version is cheap. They don't, they're just cheap. Yeah, it I don't is know. Cheap. The thing is, their budget is probably not less.
No,
they probably, I think, you know, they may spend a bit more money on, you know, whatever, they have flashy stuff and all that. But I think then there might be a little laziness too. But yeah, I mean, we didn't even really talk about it. I mean, I mentioned it. There's the task where you release the birds. Now, granted, it's kind of like finding the mayor. The difficulty there doesn't really exist, but I still like it because I'll number the task, and some weeks there'll be 5, 6 different things they do. It's awesome. If we get to 3 in the U.S., I'm doing a little dance, you know? So it's, I mean, not really, but you know, not usually, but yeah, it's cool. I like it. I mean, yeah, because putting together the motor, like, that's the thing that sometimes that I like about Canada is the way the episodes move. They move fast, but you don't feel like they're rushing. And that, I wanted to spotlight, just, I don't know, I need to look up who the editors are, like who the main editors. I know they have a team, but I'm going to give a shout out to the Amazing Race Canada editors, because you guys are awesome. Because really, the way, a really main reason why this works beyond the cast is the fact that they balance it. You don't feel like you're rushing, but you also rarely have tasks where you just watch the same, every team do the same thing over and over, because that is what drives me crazy when I watch the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. It's like they feel like they have to show every single team doing every single task, and that's not really true. You don't need to, like, you need to know where they are, but you don't need to lovingly show every detail, like every single bolt. Like, oh, I need to lift up the thing to put the extra bolt there. Oh, there's pieces left over. Like, give us the highlights. That's all we need.
Yeah, I mean, I feel a little bad for Julie and Lowell, because they've kind of been hanging out in this, like, middle of the pack. They're not danger being eliminated yet, but they're not near the top. And they're always like the 5th or 6th or 7th team to do a task. So we'll see them to do something funny, and then we don't see them much because, like you said, the show doesn't feel the need to show every single team doing every little part of it. And they're one of the victims of that. But yeah, I think they get their little moments.
Yeah, like the first team to show up gets to be the ones that introduce us to the task. And then everybody else, if they do something remarkable, we see it. If they say something funny, we see it. And yeah, Julian Lowell, by virtue of being hanging out in the back of the pack, not necessarily because I think they're bad racers, but that's just where they've been the whole time, they end up like they get their quips in. It's a good thing they got those quips, because if they didn't have those quips, we'd never see them.
Right. They'd be invisible. But yeah, let's talk about this food task, because this task, you know, in one sense, it's like, ooh, gross out. And, you know, we had a little bit, some puke noises and things, you know, poor Amy, unfortunately, you know, the vegetarian, you know, who had a rough go, but did finish, did not freak out, did not cut, you know, have a long freak out. But I really like the way this is set up, and they basically set it up so everybody can freak out when they get the dessert. But it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm going to go ahead and guess that the coconut worms are not named coconut worms because they taste like coconut.
Yeah, I think that that's probably a good guess. But because, you know, people were tough, but I didn't get the sense that nobody was pulling a Jeremy from Survivor and asking for more.
Yeah, well, they feed people on The Amazing Race, which is one of the reasons you get, like, for my money, I think food tasks on The Amazing Race are more entertaining than food tasks on Survivor, because you can do some different things with Amazing Race food tasks. Like, you can tie it into the place where you are. You can make people eat a lot of it, whereas on Survivor, that's kind of really bad for you if you've been starving and then they make you eat a lot of really unfortunate food. I mean, we see it happen over and over even with normal food. So with Amazing Race, you can make people eat quantities of food as well as qualities of food. And I love that this is just a giant plate. It's piled up with 10 different things, all of which, you know, not things you want to find in your shower.
Especially not that bat.
No, I hate it when I find bats in my shower. But I think the best reaction was Emmett with that bat. He's just like, cool, I'm eating a bat. And it made me like him. Like, he's been so kind of a non-entity this entire time. And then you see him kind of light up this leg, like when he's putting together the bike, and then he gets that bat in his hand and it's like, oh, I like this guy. He's funny. He's fun. So I was very happy. Like, we should give him bats to eat more often.
Would you describe eating bats as his jam?
Maybe he could put jam on the bats.
I don't know. He seemed pretty happy with it. And Jillian, to her credit, who has been freaking out fairly often, got this look on her face like, I am not going to freak out for the cameras. I'm doing this. I'm killing it. And she did. So I was feeling like, wow, they are really doing well this week. That worked out for a little while. But this was fun. I mean, Joel, I'm going to go back to Joel now, because, you know, they're one of the first ones up there. And Ashley sees the coconut worm and does, you know, the promo movement of just being like, oh, my God, and freaking out. And Joel, deadpan, and just, you know, let's eat it. Okay, just eats it, you know, just like it could be anything, you know, and you know, I appreciate that. You know, it's not that he's not interested or whatever, but I just see he's this laid back guy, and it's fun because he's so laid back and so mellow. I'm like waiting, even when they struggle, he'll be like, yeah, we really need to do better. We got to do that. But man, he just rolled along, and you know, even when they were struggling later, did okay. But I love seeing these teams just kind of how they're going to react to this, because they all had different reactions. They all were fun, and everybody freaked out, as I would, when they saw the worms, but they hung in there. Nobody started completely quit. And that was cool too.
Yeah, that was great. Like, everybody, even when they got to the worms, they're just like, oh, we're going to do this. And they all did it. And there was a little bit of fanfare sometimes, but I mean, this keeps being the theme of this season, I think, is you can have those reactions, you can feel your feelings, but when it comes down to it, you got to do the task. And almost everybody, every single time, even if they're freaked out, they just do the task. And that's really cool to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Amy, I mentioned that she's a vegetarian. And once she says that, and Frankie just eats the whole plate of the bugs.
That was amazing.
Which was, it's like the equivalent of carrying her bag for her, but even harder. Well, depending on how heavy your bag is. But, and then you have this ending when they finish, and you have this, and Amy does not take a penalty, does not pull a Kimmy Kappenberg, or, you know, or I think Terrence did this on a fast forward, you know, just like, I have to stick to my principles. I can't do this. No, she eats it. Granted, it doesn't stay with her very long, but she eats it. But there's this cut of Frankie being going, like, cheering and dancing right next to her. Amy is throwing up. It's just,
yeah.
I found that very entertaining. Though I normally, I say this, we enjoyed Brett and Sean's constant, or Sean's constant puking last season. So maybe I do enjoy puking on the show, but that was fun because it's like, hey, she finished it. More power to her, you know?
Well, we had Natalie in season 2. We had Brent and Sean in season 3. Now, is Amy going to, like, pick up the puking torch?
I don't know.
Or is
I
this,
think,
like, an isolated incident?
The question is, will there be another food challenge? Like, you know, will they have to eat caviar or soup or a giant egg? Or, I mean, granted, I don't think they'd be that diabolical, you know. But the Amazing Race, Canada and U.S. do like eating challenges.
4 pounds of meat.
Oh, my goodness. That would be, if she accidentally took that roadblock, I'm thinking the penalty would be coming there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, if Boston Rob takes that penalty, I don't think anybody else can feel faulted for taking it.
No, because he is the greatest player of all time. So
all time.
I was gonna do it, but then I'm like, wrong person, doesn't work. But it kind of always works.
It always works because everybody always knows who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I really love Steph's reaction. Like, they ate the food and she was kind of mildly grossed out by it. And Steph is more worried about what everybody watching is going to think of her reaction, because she really does not want to be the ugly American or ugly Canadian, as it were. And she just looks at everybody, she says, it's so good. Everything was delicious. I'm so sorry about the face.
That is so Canadian, too.
So Canadian. I'm sorry about the face.
It's basically like, you know, you're eating bugs, you're eating something you've never, well, I don't want to make assumptions, probably never eaten before in your life, and still afterwards like, I'm sorry, I got freaked out, that's really too bad. It's cute though. It works. Yeah. It works well.
So Dan, have you eaten anything that was on these plates?
No, I have not. I think the craziest thing I ate was maybe like a beef tongue, which when I was in Japan, and even that was basically just like thinly sliced meat. If you didn't know that, it wouldn't be that bad. I have not eaten anything like this. I think I'd be okay with most of it. The things that aren't moving, you can kind of do the mind over matter. The last one would be a challenge. So I have a question for you though. What's the better approach? I don't know if we're getting too gross here. Is it to with the coconut worm, is it to chew it or is it to try and just do the Matthew Von Erdfelder and swallow it?
I think you're supposed to chew it. Like, I would not be able to get through that without thinking about Matthew Von Erdfelder. And I wouldn't want the little legs. I don't think I want that effect. Especially, like, I don't want to give away too much, but there's a very similar comment in one of the later episodes of this current season of Orange is the New Black about swallowing live things whole and having legs. And yeah, I think the big problem though, like as I recall from Survivor Australia's Witchetty Grubs, is when you bite into them, they have a gooey center. I think that is also something that's very hard to get over.
Yeah, that's it's not like eating pasta at this point.
No. And I think you are supposed to, like, they don't allow you to like cut it in half before you eat it or kill it before you eat it. I think it's got to go in your mouth living. It seemed like that was the rule because nobody seemed to try to kill it first.
I'd love to see that list of rules, like that second paper that they put in there or something. Just like, you cannot kill it. You may not stomp on it. You may not do this. You cannot cut it. All these rules, like, really specific. And oh man, I think I could do it, but because I don't get that easily grossed out, but it would be a challenge.
Yeah. Well, I have eaten one of the things on the plate. I have eaten fried crickets. And the thing is, fried stuff tastes good. It's got salt and fat on it. How is that not good? I mean, if you don't think too hard about what it is, it's just crunchy. And the coconut worm is I think that's the hardest part. But the rest of it is just like, it's like eating chips. Just close your eyes and think of it as chips and it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't like pickles really, but fried pickles, great. So,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's like, it doesn't take much. Yeah, I agree. I think it would be a little, but really, you saw that. I mean, with the exception of Amy, I mean, there were a few people that kind of went, oh, this is kind of disgusting. The bat, if you stare in its eyes, you know, you don't want to do that. But in general, you could see that most people were okay with it once they kind of got over the initial shock of the plate of bugs.
I think it was overall, it was a nice little stopover before we get to the detour, which was really kind of the meat of the episode.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, they were already into the detour, and there was one point where I paused the recording, and it was like halfway through the episode. And you knew it was the last thing they were doing. But obviously, at that point, I did not recognize, you know, the challenge that would be involved with the flair bartending.
Yeah, and that's really amazing to me that it was taking people that long, because it didn't seem to me like it was any more difficult than like any of the choreographed dance numbers they have to do. But I guess the particular challenge was having to both of them do the routine, and someone always drops something. Like, one person's getting it and the other one drops something, and then that person gets it, the other person drops something. But it sure seemed to me like there was a very clear winner for what task is the task you want to take here.
Yes, and the winner was not flip-flop. No, no, no. Ooh. And the thing is, at first I saw the karaoke one, and you think, that's pretty hard. When you realize there was really one trick to the karaoke thing, and it was not stopping after the first line. Because that's where almost everyone got stuck, is when you get through the first line and then it immediately starts the next line of the music. There were many challenges to flip-flop, but I can understand not wanting to switch when you're at flip-flop, because you think, I'm going to get it the next time, because it's not so hard. It's not like the hardest task in theory that you've ever seen. It's just, it's tricky. It's deceptive.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams probably didn't quite get that just from reading the brief descriptions you get, but for me, like, the music task is always going to be the no-brainer, because when, you know, I've taken a lot of music classes in college, I have a good ear, I've had to learn how to sing stuff in a foreign language, and you just learn it phonetically. And especially, you don't have to worry about every single character, which was the other thing I'm noticing particularly about Vietnamese, because nerd that I am, I went on YouTube and I looked this song up, and I found they have a video where all the words are on the screen, as well as the English translation, which is educational. And the words, like, Vietnamese is the kind of language, it's got a lot of consonants in it. Like, every single word has several groups of consonants, even if they're all like short one syllable words, but it's, you know, consonant after consonant. And what you have to do, I think, is learn it by ear, listen to the song over and over, hear how they're singing it, and just mimic the sounds and get it on the beat without worrying too much about whether you're 100% pronouncing it correctly or, you know, 100% articulating every letter. So I think the teams that were able to listen and get it like that, I thought they did a lot better. But like you said early in the episode, Kelly and Kate are the superstars of this task. But this was amazing to me.
Yeah, and they didn't even, you saw some teams where I thought, well, that pretty much sounds like it. You know, like Frankie and Amy, again, they did okay. But Kelly and Kate just, they not only sang it and got the clue, they were the best of all the people who sang it. And they, it looked like they did it on one try. Granted, they had been practicing for a while, but they were on it. And I'm sure that the language thing helped. But still, that is, you know, it's not an excuse. And also, I think at first what made me think this was harder was the fact that I thought the judging was strict, but I don't feel like it was as strict as maybe I expected at first.
Yeah, it seemed like you pretty much had to start and finish at the right spot. But I think there were a few things working for Kelly and Kate, like some of them overt and some of them not quite as overt. Like, I would guess they know their way around the inside of a karaoke bar, for starters. And secondly, they are bilingual, so they had not only their mnemonics working for them, where they wrote everything down in like Chinese characters to help them remember, but they also are accustomed to thinking in more than one language. I think that's very helpful. But they also, one of their native languages is a tonal language. And that's, I think, is a key component here, because they're able to kind of think in not only of how you pronounce the words, but where they fall on the musical scale. Like, they both sounded good, right?
Yeah.
They were fantastic. And I think being able to speak a tonal language really helps you in a music task like this. So yeah, first try, in and out. They were great. Here's the thing that I find really curious when you're comparing the karaoke to the bartend. Kelly and Kate did it on their first try. They got out. Rita and Yvette, second try. Over at the bartending, Steph and Kristen did the best at this. It still took them 25 tries. How were they not knocked to the back of the pack?
I wonder, yeah, that's an interesting point, because I was amazed that Steph and Kristen almost beat Kelly and Kay to the mat. I mean, I don't know, it wasn't like 30 seconds, but it was fairly close. So it does, and you also bring up another point, is that Joel and Ashley, you know, nearly caught Frankie and Amy, and they seem to be pretty far behind them. So maybe it's geography. Maybe it's distance from where the pit stop was. Maybe it was set up that way because the planners knew that flip-flop was the harder task, but there was a benefit in terms of you didn't have to travel as far or you were closer to the pit stop, whereas V-Pop had that other part to it.
Yeah, that could explain it. That would be my first guess, is that maybe the V-Pop was harder to find, or maybe it took a lot more prep time than we were shown. But still, I don't think any measure of prep time could compare to the ridiculous amount of time some of these people spent at this task.
Right. I mean, it, and also too, another thing is once the teams got in there, I think once you kind of start and decide we're not going to practice anymore, I'm talking about on flip flop, I guess you could do a lot of attempts in a short time. Now it's hard to say because we saw the Jillian and Emmett just miss over and over, but that was a montage. And, you know, similar with Joel and Ashley. I mean, the both of them, 59 attempts for Joel and Ashley, over 60 for Jillian and Emmett. I mean, there's not a lot of precedence for those types of numbers.
No, like I'm thinking not since the five hole, not since the original five hole, have we seen that many attempts on something. Like even Luke and Margie at that other horrific flair bartending task, I think it only took them like 20 times.
Yeah, this is crazy. I do think, though, that it was very, very smart for the bottles they were using to not be made out of glass. They appeared to be plastic, and that saved a lot of problems.
That could have been really dangerous, and they would have gone through a lot of bottles. I was thinking the same thing, although I did note that there were still glasses behind the bar, and Emmett still did smash a whole bunch of them.
I also noticed that, too. So I was just like, well, they still... But that time with Luke and Margie, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, there was lots of glass falling and shattering and everything. That was kind of the big part of the task.
And Luke throwing the glasses down in frustration at one point.
Ah, poor Luke. Poor Luke.
That was a rough day for him.
Yeah, but so I was relieved about that. But even when it started, you know, you looked at it and you went, I thought this could be hard, but I was still kind of thinking that most of these teams did the right thing. Like, I didn't recognize how big of an error Jillian and Emmett switching detours was until they really got into it. And once they got in it, their competitors, they even talked, you know, but they weren't switching back.
Do you think they would have made up any time if they'd switched back?
Assuming that the detours were not that far away, which we didn't see anything to make us assume that, I think they probably would have done better. However, if the key with the karaoke too is not immediately be psyched out, and she was so psyched out right up front that maybe they wouldn't have. But I don't think it would have been catastrophic if they went back.
Yeah. I don't think so either, unless that karaoke bar is in the middle of freaking nowhere. And that is a possibility. Like, we have not discounted that.
Yeah. And I mean, because Julia Lowell did it. When they walked in and they started to try it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be like, you know, like Sherry and Cole, or like, you know, Sherry all over again with the rapping and everything. This is going to be bad. And they powered through. I think I've said powered through like 25 times tonight. And that the photo that's on the CTV website of them doing the karaoke is just wonderful. But to get back to what you were saying, yeah, I think Jillian and Emmett, if they had gone back, still would have probably been in the back of the pack. But when we saw them going through time after time after time, Julie and Lowell were still like eating bugs. So they probably, I think, would have probably at least finished sixth, unless it was a crazy drive, or possibly even fifth.
Well, editing can get creative, Dan. So we can't say that for sure. But yeah, I think it would have to be pretty far away for that to have made much of a difference. And I think there were several points at which Jillian and Emmett could have done something differently. And at that point, they had sunk so much time into this that if they did something differently, it was almost a guarantee that that wasn't going to work out for them and they'd get eliminated.
Right. Because objectively, you say, well, after 30 attempts, they or 20 attempts, or when they realized that they just weren't getting it, they should have left. But when you're in it, it's their mindset is not good. Their mindset is like, we must finish, we must finish. They're going to go to the karaoke, and if they struggle for 5 minutes, they're going to be like, what did we do? We should go back. It would have been one of those like back and forth, and who knows? And who knows what would have happened if Anna Tanya had picked the karaoke?
Yeah, that's I think that's the real question mark, because I mean, Anna and Tanya were amazing at the bar too. Like, they got it done very, very quickly. And I think if they had done the karaoke, it might have been actually really competitive.
Yeah, Jillian and Emma, you know, we talk about there was a leg with Gino and Jesse last season. And I'm not saying Jillian and Emma are going to win, but where Gino and Jesse had a leg where they nearly lost early on, you know, and they almost ran up a mountain and they would have lost and they survived.
Their pick got eliminated.
No, actually, they survived. That's the one where they ran up the mountain. It didn't get eliminated. Oh, okay. They got eliminated the next leg. Okay. But it was the beginning of the end for them, though, I have to say, running up that mountain. But they almost did and then decided at the last minute, no, we shouldn't. But my point is this, it could be one of two things. Is this a signifier to us? Because we've seen little hints before that Jillian and Emmett are not as powerful as we think. And probably now no express pass. Possibly could go out, or is this more the hiccup that leads to their victory?
It could honestly go either way. And I think you make a really good point, because without this leg, Jillian and Emmett are ridiculously overpowered. They're like the video game character you play that's got like all of the hit points. I mean, somebody that plays video games, supply me the analogy I'm looking for here. Like, is there a Pokemon that Jillian and Emmett are?
You don't want to pick Pokemon with me. That would not be the right choice. I don't know. They're like the big boss that you fight at the end of Castlevania or something. I don't know. You know, there's someone that's, or there's somebody with invincibility. Like, man, I'm just going to pick out Nintendo references. Like Mario, when you get the star and you go,
yeah,
you have the invincibility.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they're kind of like running forward, and, you know, all the little Koombas or whatnot are just flying away. But now they're kind of, they almost jumped off the edge, and luckily they have another guy, but I'm going to end this metaphor right now. But,
oh no, please do keep going. Are they going to find the warp zone?
They found the warp zone, but you know, no, it's, I don't know. I haven't been convinced completely they were going to win the whole time, because we've seen these little cracks with them fighting or with, you know, him being a little stubborn, but, it's hard to say. This actually though, especially given what we'll discuss in a little bit, might actually benefit them if U-turns come up down the road, though.
Very true. And, I mean, we've said it before on this very podcast that every team has one of those tasks, that you can be good at everything, and you will find that one task, and it could trip you up, and it could totally torpedo your entire game. And maybe this was just that one task, and now they're through it, and now they're just going to make it to the end. It makes it clear that they have that task. Like, they are capable of failure, and they could go out. Anybody could go out. Again, it's anybody's game on either end of this race.
Yeah, and that's great that it's, you know, that it's so, we saw, that's another reason why I enjoyed this leg. I mean, yes, we still had Steph and Kristen near the top, but Joel and Ashley won last week, and they really struggled this week. So it wasn't just Jillian and Emmett. I mean, Joel and Ashley did not finish. I mean, they were at a point, they only took 39 attempts, but, you know, 59, excuse me, 39 was when I wrote a note earlier, but they did 59 and they were in trouble too, but they got their, you know, they didn't go to the other detour and switch. So some of these top teams that we talked about how strong they were struggle, but then next week they could be near the top. That's the cool unpredictability.
And especially they've got a Trans-Pacific flight ahead of them on this next leg. I have to imagine everybody's going to be on the same one or two flights. So the order is going to be mixed up yet again. It's just like resetting to zero.
Yeah, I assume they'll all be on the same flight, just judging by how they've done it in the past, which I'm okay with, because, I mean, this leg, we did have some continuation, which is good to see sometimes, because you do see some, you know, some rewards for doing well, but it'll be nice. I'm sure Jillian and Emmett will be very happy, because I don't think teams were 8 hours apart, but I think there was some spread between the top and the bottom this time.
Yeah, I think there definitely were. I'm going to be very closely watching the departure times.
Yeah, me too. And one other thing I want to mention about the bartending task is the wonderful, excited man who gave out the clue. And even after 60 plus attempts, still would say, that was some bartending. And I enjoy that because they do. The Amazing Arcana does like the little phrases they like to use sometimes, you know, or the phrases to be wrong, like, you need to do it. I don't know if I remember it well, but like, you know.
Your sticks are wrong.
Yeah, or something very, they get like a really simple phrase, but he was committed. He was going to say it with just the sort of level of enthusiasm each time.
Yeah, and some of the task judges are better at this than others. I'm thinking specifically of, there was a particular speed bump in season one where the Tims had to recite a poem, and they had a guy dressed like Robert Service, who was the poet. And every time they got it wrong, you would have to say, that's not the way I penned this poem. And the guy dressed as Robert Service was having none of it. He did not care.
He was just like, that's not the way I penned this poem. It's like, well, after having to say it 50 times, that's a little of a tongue twister, though.
Right. And I think there is some creative editing going on here, because I do think they shoot a lot of establishing shots of the task judge, like saying, you got it right, and handing over the clue. And they do that before the racers are even there, because a lot of time the task judge is not the person telling them they got it right or not.
Right. And that whole shot of them like smiling and putting the clue out, because it's, you know, it's a very close race. And I know they do make the racers stop here and there to stand a certain way or whatnot. But I would expect, especially near the pit stop, they're not going to be like, no, don't take the clue yet. We need to turn the camera around and take. No, those are all shots, I would imagine. Most when they just show the person directly at the camera. You're right. That's a good point that he probably said it, but not. Most of those were probably not from that time.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially like anytime the greeter is like smiling and holding a clue into the camera, like that's pretty much. And I know they showed an identical shot of the karaoke judge clapping and smiling about three different times.
You're ruining it. Are you going to talk to me about Santa Claus now? This is really frustrating to me.
No, Dan, my philosophy on Santa Claus is if you want him to be real, he is real.
Well, that's good. In my mind, every shot we see on The Amazing Race happened exactly as it was shown. And there is no false editing. And I'm going to stick to that to the end.
Okay. I will not. I'll try not to shatter your perceptions any further.
And I am immediately fired from the podcast.
We need dreamers on the podcast, Dan.
I try. You know, I root for these teams. I'm high-fiving people and just pumping my fist. I'm into it, so it's good.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm like 110% on Team Julian Lowell, so right there with you.
Oh, Boise's. That's all I have to say.
All right, so I think we've got one more pretty major thing that we have not touched on yet that we need to get into. And that would be the conundrum of it being the fourth leg, and Steph and Kristen have this express pass that they need to get off their hands. So we need to talk a little bit about, was this the right thing to do? And we also need to talk about what effed up rules are in place that let them do it this way.
I was stunned because they were at the detour and they're there with Joel and Ashley and Jillian and Emmett. And my thought is they're going to give it to Joel and Ashley. They have to. They're not going to see any more people. They're going to go to the pit stop. They're going to stand right next to the mat and hand it to the team before they check in. And that to me sounded amazing. I was looking forward to that. But the fact that they were able to check in and then John said they could just leave and pick somebody. I mean, they did make them come back. But did you? I'm assuming that this is not how you expected the rules were written.
I would not have expected that, no, like for as much U.S. Amazing Race as I've watched, but it does seem in line with Amazing Race Australia seems to do things like this. So if they're borrowing from other countries, I guess I could see the logic in it, but my philosophy on this would have been, if you're allowed to do that when you get to the mat, you should just say the name of the team you think is going to be eliminated. And it's like, oh, well, too bad. We really wanted to give it to Ann and Tanya, but I guess, you know, I gave it to John to give it to them, but I guess they're just going to have to take it home with them now because they're out of the race. Oh, shucks.
That's so interesting. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I mean, I guess they probably were kicking themselves afterwards. But if you know, they know who started last. They have not seen Anna Tanya during this whole leg. Yeah, it's just, I wonder if they, if production would have been like, made them pick someone else or done something there. I don't know how that would have worked, but I just wonder. We did see them early in the leg, or I think it was early in the leg, or I'm not sure if it was an interview, saying they wanted to give it to Frankie and Amy, but that's a big hole in the rule. You know, and also we talked about this last week, where the best way to give away an express pass wasn't the best way to give away. I mean, maybe they didn't know where they were in the rankings, but they could have given it to Joel and Ashley or Jillian and Emmett, and it would have been burned immediately. It would have been gone. It was perfect. Those teams were struggling, but maybe it was too early. Maybe they weren't far enough in to see how bad it was for those teams yet.
I mean, that's what I have to imagine. I think they were there for so long. They had to think they needed every little bit of lead that they could get over these other teams, because if they wound up spending so much time at that bartending detour that they were at the back of the pack and these were the only other two teams at the back of the pack, like, for all they knew, Anna and Tanya went and did the karaoke and checked in like fourth place, and they're hanging out in like sixth or seventh or eighth. Maybe that was the assumption. They didn't want to give away the express pass, watch it get burned, and end up getting beaten to the mat at the end.
Yeah, that is, and there is, you know, at home, it's easy to say, well, they should have done this or this because we knew what was going on.
Right.
But I can imagine there was a good sense at the, you know, at the bartending, like when you saw Jillian and Emmett's face when Anna and Tanya showed up and they're like, oh my gosh, thank, oh good. They probably for sure thought they were last at that point, Jillian and Emmett did. So yeah, because they were there so long, I would have assumed it too. So that's a good point. Now the flip side of this obviously is beyond the rules, which I still think are very strange, is the show made a really big deal about, and Ashley made a really big deal about how stunned she was. You know, Frank and Amy were thrilled, but Ashley obviously is like, oh, they're players. Now it's a little weird to me because I feel like they finish very high. They're very strong. You shouldn't be that surprised they're a threat. But what do you think about this? Do you think this is going to come back to haunt Steph and Kristen?
I could definitely see Steph and Kristen being target number one on the U-turn board now. Like, if you really think about it, they are at the front of the pack consistently. They have an express pass. And now they've proven that they're strategic. Like, if I'm Joel and Ashley and I'm in front of them, I definitely U-turn Steph and Kristen.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the fact that the show made a big deal about it, and granted, it was on the mat that you saw her face, but they went on and made a big deal about it. And it seems like the show is setting up a story, even with focusing again the previously on and them not telling people, they're setting up a story where Joel and Ashley step to the U-turn mat in front of them.
Right. That seems to be the angle that we're taking on this. I don't know. My other question is, there must have been enough room to make as many tries as you wanted with that bartending task, or I think we would have seen Steph and Kristen use that pass themselves.
Right. So that's another thing where you thought they must have not been that concerned at that point. Like, yeah, because if they had had to wait every single time, because we did see times where teams were watching other teams try. So I didn't totally get how the turns work there.
Yeah. It seemed like if nobody else was ready to try it right away, either there were multiple stations or you could just stand there and like give it a whole bunch of tries at once. It's the only way that makes sense, that everybody could do it that many times.
There had to have been at least two stations, because I think there was a stretch of time where Jillian and Emmett and Joel and Ashley were just trying back and forth over and over. And maybe but it seems like it would have taken too much time to keep stopping and flipping turns.
Yeah, it really did. And they were really lucky, I think, this leg, that you never had a bunch of teams trying the same task all in one place. Like, it seemed like almost nobody was in the same place at the same time, apart from this long stretch where Steph and Kristen and Jillian and Emmett were there.
Yeah, and I think part of that is how they didn't bunch them up when the leg started. It just kind of continued from the previous leg. And there was a lot of flipping around based on task performance, but and the fact that there were so many little tasks that they did, that you had a stretch of time where you had teams at the roadblock and at the food and at the detour and at the other detour. It was interesting how spread out they were in that way.
It was maybe a little more time consuming this leg. Like, it seems like this leg may have taken longer than other legs just by watching where the sun was when they rolled in and where it was when they got done. Because they did start in late morning, early afternoon, and it was dark by the time the last team finished.
Well, I noticed it was even pretty much dark by the time Anna Tanya even got to most of the tasks, which granted, I don't know when, you know, sunset was at the time, but most of them started, like you said, around noon, 1 o'clock, you know, or so. But there was even a point where Ashley said, we've been here all day or something. Or so I'm thinking it was probably very late at night when they finished, possibly 11, 12 at night or something.
Yeah, it could have been. It didn't seem like they spent that much time on the bus. Like John said, it was 100 kilometers.
Right. So barring some crazy traffic, that wouldn't really take that long. I mean, it's not like 5 minutes, obviously, but no. It's not like 6 hours.
Like, I would say 3 hours at the most on that bus. So I guess that makes more sense that if they started rolling in at like 2 p.m. and started their tasks then, and it gets dark... Like, let's say it gets dark at 6 or 7. That's not terrible.
Yeah, so you're looking at the teams that finished first probably did a leg that, you know, depending on where they started, like, let's, you know, 8 hours leg or something.
Right. And I guess that's maybe a little longer than usual, but not terrible.
So are we ready for questions? Do we need to say anything more? Anna and Tanya, friends for 36 years.
That's amazing. That's as long as I've been alive.
And they haven't been alive that much longer.
It's very true. Yeah. Well, we got so many questions. And I think my experiment of telling people, just start tweeting us questions as soon as you finish watching the episode and we will catch up and we won't worry too much about being spoiled. That seemed to work because we got a ton of questions.
Greatest move in Amazing Race Canada podcast history.
I am the strategic mastermind of Amazing Race Canada podcasting.
The only challenge now, I just have to figure out what were the really good questions that we have not already addressed, because a lot of these were really good questions, but we did end up addressing some of them already, but we still did get a lot of good questions, I will say.
Yeah. Well, I've got a good one here. I've got, new Twitter follower Joel Walenga wants to know, would it have been quicker for Jillian and Emmett to have taken a penalty as soon as they arrived rather than 63 attempts?
Well, my answer is I'm guessing no, because detour penalties are 6 hours. And so if they had just taken a penalty, not my thought is, if you're going to do that, you go back to the karaoke. Karaoke's not going to take 6 hours.
No.
So like we talked about earlier, my thought is the mistake, if there was a mistake, because it's easy to say, obviously, if someone told them up front, this is going to take you 63 times, they would have said, we're going to go do the karaoke. But I don't think the penalty made any sense here. When you have a detour, neither one is impossible. It's not like it's something that you are just not physically capable of doing. I just don't see, and the way it was gone, if they take a penalty even at the beginning, they're getting eliminated.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. I think the most key thing that you just brought up right now is if you quit a detour, the penalty is not 4 hours, the penalty is 6 hours. And that's pretty much going to screw your game.
Yeah, I mean, that would be it, especially given that teams, you know, there wasn't a huge gap. This wasn't a case where teams started 8 hours behind. I mean, there was a few hours between them, but they had to assume they did not have enough time. And it just seems like a dumb risk. I mean, and this is not a pick on a question. It's a good question. But it just, at this point of the race, there's 8 teams left. It seems like you're just, I don't know, you're just, it's not like even the first leg. You're just asking for trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that the number of penalties people take typically gets smaller as we get further down the road.
Right. So this is a question that's a little different, but it's about our great host, John Montgomery from Rouleauville, who asked, and I have an opinion on this. I want to know if you agree, but has John Monty seemed as committed in season 4? I was expecting him to eat the bat or the worm.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he did eat something, so we give him that. But he was kind of ginger about it. No pun intended there. I think, you know, I think he's still pretty game for almost anything. But I have noticed now he's more comfortable in the hosting position. when he first started, I think he was very eager to make sure everybody knew he wanted this job and he wanted to keep this job. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to bungee jump. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this shot of snake juice. And he did it all with so much gusto that they're like, okay, this guy's really committed. And now he is an institution in Canada. There's no way they can get rid of him. He is the show as far as Amazing Race Canada is concerned. He doesn't need to have quite so much energy. I mean, that's my theory.
Yeah, and I mostly agree with that. My thought is, though, is that I feel like it's a little more deceptive. Like, he's not doing things that are just, you know, we haven't seen him do as many, like, the one-legged ski last season still is one of the more ridiculous things I've seen. But he did do that. He read that, like, clue from the streets, very highly trafficked street, and he was kind of standing out in the streets and still was managed not read the clue but to do the spiel. And I was thinking, those cars are really close to him. That's still a little risky. And I still love his enthusiasm. He's still a bit different than Phil. Like, when he was excited about the singing, man, he was excited. So it's still, he may not be taking as many risks, but he has not fallen into the coasting mode. He still seems like this is the greatest job he's ever wanted in his life when he's out there.
Yeah, the novelty has not worn off for him. He's not probesting it in yet.
Well, you know, Probst usually probes it in, but every once in a while he breaks out of it. But no, John, I feel like he's still enjoying it, and I think he really likes these teams, for at least from what I can gauge.
Yeah, well, how could you not like these teams?
I am not sure, because I feel like, you know, I've pulled myself back from, we've probably done it a bit, just raving about each individual team and how much fun they are. But on that note, I know I'm jumping in again, but should we give Lowell some kind of award? This is Kate Sears' question.
I love
for
this.
The depth and quality of his dad jokes. And then my favorite part of her question, the guy is running a DadCon 1.
It's true. He is definitely, he's full dad. But I mean, he is a dad. I think that's a thing. Like, my husband's going to this class in a couple of weeks it's called Dad Boot Camp. And we're just assuming they're just going to teach him all the dad jokes while he's there.
I think it happens automatically. You can't help it. You just start to love puns. I think it's because your kids will laugh at almost anything you do. That it does lower, you know, my wife's not going to laugh at everything I say, but your kids, you could just do a funny dance and say something goofy and they laugh. So it kind of lowers your threshold for silliness.
So it's an easier crowd. I like it. Yeah. And honestly, I thought again, and I've thought this every episode now, Lowell and Julie getting up to do the karaoke and being like really terrible singers. I thought, I want to hang out with these people. They must be so much fun. And they can make all the dad jokes they want.
I underestimated how dorky they were. And I mean that in the best way possible. Like, at first I thought, well, again, I've kind of been trained. You have a couple. They're going to talk about their kids. They're going to, you know, talk about his, you know, his condition. I did not realize how ridiculously dorky and silly they would be. And yeah, I'm looking at those people like, those are my people right there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. You can't just cast someone to have, like, to fill that adversity slot. You know, you almost forget that this is something he's going through at certain points, and it's not his whole story. And that's kind of what makes me love them. Like, you couldn't just say, we need a blind person, let's get a blind person. It had to be these people. It had to be this person.
Yeah, it's almost a non-story. The only time I've noticed is there's been a few roadblocks that I think you've seen that she takes them because it's something he couldn't do. But I really appreciate, too, that the editing hasn't hammered that home. And yeah, it's so nice. I mean, not to keep talking about Survivor, but I think about, you know, Jacqueline from a few seasons ago, who constantly, and I'm sure the producers, that's the thing, I don't even blame her that much. The producers, I'm sure, were asking the question. The editors chose to put it in. This is a case where there's enough good material from them with just being who they are, Julie and Lowell, that they don't feel like they have to push it on us. You know, of course, if they do start talking about it, you know what that means.
Oh, I know exactly what that means.
So I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I do too, because they are solid racers. They're not great inspired racers, but they're amazing characters. And I want them to go far. I'm very, very worried that they do not have a prayer of winning this race, which is something I would say for almost none of these teams. But I haven't seen a spark from them that says, I think they're going to go the distance. And that makes me so sad because I want them to be there forever.
Yeah, and that is one thing to bring up in terms of the editing, because we talked about how the position they've been in has made them not be shown that much. But that could be the one downside of us not really getting a story beyond their cute and dorky and fun, is that they're not really setting us up for a super run for them. But I hope they last a while. That doesn't mean they're out next week. It just means they may not be, you know, in the final three.
They could be getting the Nick and Matt edit.
Well, at least they're not talking constantly about how they don't finish first and stuff. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, they seem pretty resigned to it. They know why it is.
They're just like, we're not last. We're good.
Hey, not last is the only difference between first and not last is with first you win a trip.
Yes, and every time you finish first, it is a trip. There are no other prizes. No $5,000. It's a trip.
It's a trip. All of it's a trip. Okay, so I've got a question from A Shizzle wants to know. Question, why do the bartending type challenges always seem to take so long? Amazing Race US and Amazing Race Canada. 50 plus attempts is a lot. And I think it's a fair question because when you think bartending, you don't necessarily think high level skills.
I don't know. I think maybe we just underestimate the skills involved with like cocktail and the movie, like bartending. I mean, who knew? But I'm not sure what it is. I think it's these, they have a lot of dancing tasks, but you don't see that many tasks. And I'm sure some people can jump in and tell me what I'm forgetting, but you don't see that many where it's like dance and juggle these glasses, or dance and do this, or move in this order and do something else. And I think something like this week, it was a matter of, it was kind of like a dance, but then you also had props to use. And then you also had to make the drink. And I think just having those multiple steps, which they like to do with these tasks, is tricky. They kind of mix it up.
Yeah. Pun intended.
Yes. And here's a question for you. Well, this is not a question from someone. It's based on this. Why are there so many tasks at bars?
Because a bar is an easy space to rent, is why that is.
Yes, that is true. And you can do different things like DJing and whatnot. But I enjoyed this. I'm not really critical this time because it led to a lot of interesting things. I still feel like putting things at bars and saying they're cultural is a bit of a stretch. I mean, specific to the region, but this one I felt like was well done.
Yeah, like every major world city has nightlife. That's just a thing.
Yeah, you could do that in St. Louis and be like, this drink is only from here. It's like, yeah, well, I guess, you know, sort of, but it's cool. So I want to read this one because it came from someone who just started watching The Amazing Race Canada. It's from Alex Wilpon. And she said, this is the first Amazing Race Canada season I've watched because I wanted to see Jillian and Emmett. Okay. And I'm enjoying it much more than recent seasons of Amazing Race US. Now, I'm going to throw you the softball here.
Right down the plate.
Well, I mean, this first half is the softball. We'll start there. Were the first three seasons just as good?
Yes.
All right. Now, here's the trickier question. How would you rank the seasons? So I'm going to pull out this one because I feel like it's incomplete. So far, it's been very good. I know how I would rank them. So how would you rank the first three seasons?
I would actually, I think, straight down the middle, 1, 2, 3.
Interesting. Yeah. I think my thought, I had it as 2, 1, 3, but I feel like 1 and 2 were like really close. To me, it almost came down to, I really found they went overseas and I really liked Natalie and Megan's kind of dominance, even though it wasn't the most thrilling. But to me, it's really close. But Alex, number 3 is also very good. So please don't skip it based on this ranking.
I would rank all 3 of these seasons above pretty much any season of the U.S. Amazing Race from the past 5 years.
Yeah, and I might even push it back further. Well, probably back to like 17, I think. I mean, I don't know. There were other good seasons in between, so we don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But it's tough. It's a little tough to compare to the U.S. One, because the U.S. has been on so long, but also just because of the focus more on Canada and on culture and all that. But I will say, Alex, if you're enjoying this season, it's not that hard to find the first three seasons online. It's worth your time.
It absolutely is. And I think they're all like, if you're looking for a binge watch, you could do a lot worse. But I think this segues quite nicely into another related question that comes from our Facebook. The great Scott St. Pierre, who does so much behind the scenes for Rob Has a Podcast, wants to know from us, as two Americans watching this Canadian edition, do you enjoy the focus on Canadian locations, or do you prefer editions like the U.S. with a more worldly focus?
You know, we discussed this a little bit about Canada last week, and to answer his question mostly directly, I really like the focus on the Canadian locations. Personally, I mean, because having not visited Canada that much, and even though I was aware of some of the big cities, there's a lot of places I wasn't aware existed. I don't know about a lot of the connections, even to the international countries that John Montgomery is so nice to point out to me. So to me, it's been really cool to learn a lot of new things. So along with enjoying the cast and the competitions, I'm getting that. Comparing it to the U.S. is a little tricky because I feel like there were seasons of the U.S. that I loved. And there are still parts of going around. I do like the idea of going around the world, but I only like that if it's done in a really unique way. And I feel like lately the U.S. version has been phoning it in a little too much.
Yeah, I would agree. I think sometimes the U.S. version travels for the sake of traveling. And I don't want them to go full family edition on this, but I think they could certainly find more interesting things in their own backyard than they frequently find abroad.
Yeah, it's almost like a case like, oh, they're going to India. Okay, you know, that'll be crazy. Oh, they're going to Australia. Oh, that, you know, and it's the location is important. But a lot of it, too, is what I like about what Canada does is that it's Amazing Race Canada. It's not just the U.S. version with Canadian contestants. It's really Canada is very important to the show.
Yeah. And it really, from season one, it's been a love letter to Canada. It's been saying like so many Canadians will travel abroad, but they've never spent a significant amount of time exploring their own country. And so this is to show you all of the amazing stuff you can find right here in Canada. And I love that about it because Canada can get away with this in a way that the U.S. can't.
Right.
You know, if they did this on the U.S. Amazing Race, we're going to just stick within our 50 states. USA, USA, show us why it's the best country in the world. And everybody else is a loser. That doesn't work so well in the U.S. Like, it comes off as jingoistic. And in Canada, you can be much more earnest about your love for your country. And I think my envy of that is one of the reasons I really love Amazing Race Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And I also, I think it relates. I mean, the Amazing Race Canada is really popular in Canada. And it's a great show. But I also think the connection to the country is one of the reasons. And John Montgomery, I mean, the whole package is just, it's all great. So this is kind of just something that we didn't do last week that I noticed.
Right, yes.
Ruth Abraham asked, was there an update on the Beatnik bus in last week's podcast? Does the Rahab bump exist north of the border? Now, the answer to the second question is, of course, that's obvious.
I think our following in Canada is bigger than our U.S. following, to be honest.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
But the Beatnik bus update, Dan, have you checked it out?
I checked it tonight, but I assume it has not gone up since before we started recording the podcast.
I would guess not. As of 5 minutes before we started recording, Beatnik bus was up to 671 followers.
Now, correct me, but we were on last week, it was in the 500s, or 2 weeks ago, it was in the 500s, correct?
Weren't we like followers 548, 549 or somewhere around there?
Somewhere in there. I was thinking that. So I'm not going to give, because when we recorded that, the Amazing Race Canada had already aired for like 3 days.
Yeah.
So my thought is everyone who watched the show in Canada had, of course, already started following. So I'm going to give 100, at least 100 followers to us.
Yeah, I think that is huge. We helped the Beatnik bus increase its follower base by 20%. That's huge.
We deserve something more for that.
I think if we ever make it up to Calgary, we at least deserve to like get our pictures taken in front of the Beatnik bus.
I think so. I think we deserve it.
I would even say they should at least drive us around the block in the Beatnik bus.
So I have a couple more, but if there's one you want to ask, I will yield the floor here.
No, go right ahead if you got one in the hopper.
Well, I mean, a couple of these, this question, we don't really need to talk about Survivor, but I thought this was interesting just again to talk about kind of how well they've done with casting the teams this season. So Kemper Boyd just asked, could Survivor casting maybe talk to the Amazing Race Canada about how to cast interesting women? Now, I actually might even say the Amazing Race US, but we rag on that enough.
Yes.
But I don't really need to talk about Survivor much, but I think that It's been throughout the Amazing Race Canada. I feel like they've done a really good job with their cast in general. But what I've enjoyed is how we have, you know, now five. We had five, now four all-female teams. And they, all of them seem to be, like, different. They're different types of people. I mean, do you agree? Do you think what I really like is how different each team is this season.
Yeah, I like that we didn't get, you know, there's so many seasons of the U.S. team. They just have that, like, slot where it's like, here's the cute girls that pack 10 pounds of makeup, and here's the other girls that aren't quite as cute but are more down to earth and maybe a little brainier. And it sure seems like this shakes all of that up. Like, the casting this season has really been, and I don't even think they were, I'm sure they were consciously trying to get some stronger women in there so that we didn't have another Gino and Jesse winner type season. But I think honestly, they looked at what was there on the board and they had these standout teams. It's like, we got to put all these teams in here. Like, these are all great teams that are all different kinds of people. And the fact that they happen to all be female was just kind of a happy bonus.
Yeah. Cause even Ann and Tanya, they finished eighth, and I think I underestimated them. Like, I mean, they weren't making jokes every 5 minutes, but they were tough. I mean, they said they want to prove that they're tough. I think they did. And that's, you know, that moms prove they're tough to kids characters. I've seen on the show and kind of gone, oh, but they've powered through some adversity and finished eighth, but they didn't give up. They fought pretty hard.
Yeah. I was very impressed. And I was also, I wonder how much of this is down to editing. Like, I've met a lot of the US racers over the course of my many TarCons under my belt. And even the people that are boring on television have more personality than most of my friends. And I got to wonder, maybe some of it's down to editing. Like, maybe the Canadian editors just do a better job of robustly portraying individuals.
I think where the two shows currently are right now, I agree. At least in terms of what I'm looking for, too. Because I have to give that caveat, because maybe in the US version, they've decided we want to edit. Well, I know they've decided they want to edit the show a certain way, I'm sure. But they decided that their focus is on something different. But I really like what the Amazing Race editing focuses on with the teams.
Yeah. And to be clear, we don't know what that focus is most of the time.
Yeah, no. And I have not spoken to an editor. I don't know. But I just like that we see different sides and they don't just keep hitting us over the head with the same parts of the story.
It's true. It's not as formulaic. And in terms of, like, who is there, what they're doing, none of it is ever exactly how we think it's going to go. And I treasure that about it.
All right. Well, I think we've done enough raving. We probably should wait till next week to continue the love fest for the Amazing Race Canada.
I like the positivity in this podcast, Dan. I feel like we have so much love for this show. It just, like, it creates an aura of positivity over my whole week whenever I think about everything that happens on Amazing Race Canada. It's just kind of, I think we need this light in our lives right now.
I think so, because I had kind of a dull day at work yesterday, but then I got home and, you know, put the kids to bed and watched the show, and I was so happy afterwards. And granted, watching the show generally makes me happy, but something about this group, it's just, it's good. It's positive.
Yeah, it's like they're just a bunch of fun people, and it's contagious. Like, watching them is as fun as being there with them. So kudos, Amazing Race Canada Season 4. You're doing it again. This has been a joy to podcast about so far, and I'm sure it will continue to be a joy.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to let up, because it's different than just having a cool task. If you like the people, even if we lose a team we like, there's other teams we like too. So I think we're in good shape going forward the rest of the way.
Yeah, we're not going to have one of those final legs where it's like, just pick one and pretend that team won because you don't really need to watch it.
I hope not.
All right. So anyway, I've got a few administrative notes to throw out to everybody. Thank you all for tweeting your questions and for leaving the comments and for leaving Facebook questions for us. We are so, so grateful to hear from all of you and to get such wonderful, nuanced feedback. It really means a lot to us. And all the ways you can do that, tweet at us. I am at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton.
And that's the easiest, quickest way to get in touch with us. And during the week, like especially before the episode airs, if you've got additional miscellaneous thoughts, we'd love to engage with you there. You can also leave us a comment if you've got more than 140 characters worth of thought, which I know you often do. Like, look at Dan and me. We have an hour and 15 minutes worth of thoughts. You can go on to robhaswebsite.com, find our most recent episode, and leave a comment there. It's very easy to do, and we love those as well. Finally, there are many benefits to becoming a Rob Has a Podcast patron. The least of which is access to our patron-only Facebook group, where we have a thread every week, where we talk about all kinds of things. And it also contains all the information that any non-Canadian might want to know about how to access Amazing Race Canada when they themselves are not in Canada. So we strongly encourage you to support the podcast that way, and that helps us all out. So with all of that, Dan, do you have a hashtag for the week?
Oh my goodness. I'm falling apart here. Oh, here we go. How about Oh Boysies? Could we spell that?
Yeah. Are we spelling it O-H-B-O-Y-S-E-S?
That'll work.
Yeah. Or are we talking about the erstwhile pseudo kettle cooked potato chip flavor of the mid-80s?
I'm thinking no.
Okay. All right. We'll stick with the spelling I just gave out. Tweet us with that hashtag if you got all the way to the end. We would love to hear from you. So, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Dan, for another great week of podcasting. And we'll see you next week.